This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org. Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Four states, Alaska, Wyoming, Arizona, and Vermont, require no special permit for gun owners to carry a concealed weapon. And this year, New Hampshire might join them. Under a recent Senate bill, anyone who already has a license to carry a weapon openly could also carry concealed. The bill's supporters call it a modest change, since it's not expanding who can have a gun and who can't, just how legal owners can carry it. But opponents don't see it that way, including law enforcement, who feel the measure limits their ability to deny certain people concealed permits and, by extension, keep the public safe. And this discussion in New Hampshire has echoed around the country. Over the past two decades, there's been a national push to ease state restrictions on the right to bear arms in public, whether open or concealed carry. But at the same time, non-gun-owning people, most famously some patrons of Starbucks, have protested, saying they don't feel safe sipping a latte next to someone who's armed. Today in The Exchange, laws and logistics around concealed carry. We'll find out what the New Hampshire bill aims to do and tap into the national conversation on this. And let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests with us in studio is J.R. Hull, Republican State Representative from Dunbarton, board member of the New Hampshire Firearms Coalition. He co-sponsored the bill I mentioned, SB 116. And Representative Hull, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Also with us, Steve Shurtleff, Democratic House Minority Leader from Penacook and a former U.S. Marshal. And Representative Shurtleff, good to see you too. Both of you, thank you for making it through the snow.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, and joining us from sunny Los Angeles is Adam Winkler, professor of constitutional law at the University of California, Los Angeles, author of the book Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. And Adam Winkler, welcome back to The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, and I actually want to start with you, Adam Winkler. The Second Amendment says we have a right to keep and bear arms. What's important, Adam, about that second verb, not just keep, but bear?
Well, in 2008, the Supreme Court, for the first time in American history, made clear that the Second Amendment does protect an individual's right to have a handgun in their home for personal protection. That's the keep part of keep and bear arms. You can keep a gun in your home. The court did not clearly address bearing arms and whether we had a right to carry guns in public. But it does seem that the common sense understanding of the word bear and some language in the Supreme Court's opinion would suggest the same, that you do have a right to carry a gun in public in some circumstances. Now, that question really isn't a big question in some sense because every state allows people in some circumstances to carry guns in public. So the real question will be, can states require permits before they allow people to carry guns in public? And if so, what kind of permits can they offer? Can they make permits? Is it constitutionally required to make permits widely available? Many states have permits for concealed carry that are called shall-issue permits, which means so long as you're a law-abiding person, you're basically going to get a permit if you apply. Other cities and some states have may-issue permitting, much more restrictive, basically provides local sheriffs with the opportunity to make a judgment about whether you're someone who should carry a gun in public. So one of the big battles in the Second Amendment days, both in legislatures and in courts, is whether you have a right to carry a gun in public and what kind of permitting states can impose on your ability to carry that gun.
So states are kind of wrestling with this, Adam, the permitting and also how they should approach open versus concealed. Is one typically harder to do than the other in terms of, you know, permits and laws and so forth, open versus concealed?
Well, typically, although there is variation, open carry is easier to do, in part because open carry is not all that popular and hasn't been all that popular for many decades. As a result, states really focus their efforts on restricting concealed carry and requiring permits for concealed carry. But it does vary. There are states like California where you're not allowed to openly carry, and states like even Texas, which has very liberal gun policy, which today does not allow people to openly carry firearms. So there are variations in this, and it's a real divide in the gun community today about whether they want concealed carry, which is probably what most gun owners who want to carry guns in public prefer, versus open carry. There is a strong and vocal minority in the gun community that wants to carry guns openly. And in part, that's about normalizing guns, making people see the guns are there and trying to make it less offensive to some to see guns in public.
And Representative Hull, I'd love your thoughts on this. Again, getting back to that keep and bear arms in the Constitution's Second Amendment. The nickname for this bill, if I could call it that, is constitutional carry. So just elaborate, please, on the constitutional nature of this.
So just like the U.S. Constitution, New Hampshire has both Articles 2 and 2A, which talk about the right to keep and bear arms. And this was, unlike other Bill of Rights amendments, this was added in just recently, back in the 1980s. So this was not something that was put in place in 1792. This is a more recent addition to the New Hampshire Constitution. And bearing arms, the language is clear. It's on your person. And the big difference between open carry and concealed carry is open carry may exacerbate someone's emotional reaction where concealed carry doesn't or discreet carry doesn't. So the bill before us, SB 116, allows for concealed carry, and it allows someone to do concealed what they've always been allowed to do openly.
And that's the difference then.
Right. So New Hampshire does not have any requirements for open carry. There's no permits. There's no licensing. If you're legal to own, you're legal to carry openly. What this does is extends that to those who prefer to carry discreetly.
So if someone wants to carry concealed, Representative Hull, what do they have to do now?
The current process is they need to go to their chief of police or the selectman and apply for a license to carry. It's not a permit. It's a license. It's a $10 fee for in-state residents. It's a $100 fee for out-of-state residents, and then wait no more than 14 days. The issue is we've seen abuses both in terms of the turnaround time. We've seen abuses by chiefs who fail to issue because they have concerns, some of which are not even valid concerns.
So your feeling is, hey, if I'm legal to carry, if I'm legal to own, I'm right. legal to carry openly, what's the hang-up about carrying concealed?
Correct. We actually see that it would make it safer because you're not going to necessarily start creating the emotional reaction that you'd see for someone carrying openly.
What's the problem with concealed carry, in your opinion, Representative Shurtleff?
Well, first of all, this bill that we have in New Hampshire is one of four states that has similar legislation. It's model legislation by the NRA. It's also pending in West Virginia, Idaho, and South Dakota. Our problem is my thoughts are that this is a solution looking for a problem. Our chiefs and county sheriffs do a fine job of vetting individuals. The only criteria is suitability. I think Chief David Mara from Manchester said he issued over 1,000 concealed carry permits last year. 82 were denied because of the suitability. Now, J.R., Representative Hull, has mentioned that there's a time limit. If a person doesn't get a response back to the request for a permit, they have a right to appeal that to the Superior Court. If they're denied a permit, they have a right to appeal that to the circuit court. So there's avenues available to anybody who feels that they are not treated fairly.
Why is there a difference, though? I mean, you talk about certain people. Police chiefs make that distinction as to who shouldn't get this concealed permit. If someone's okay to carry openly, why shouldn't they be okay to carry concealed? If they've already made it through that first, hurdle.
That first hurdle. I've heard from police chiefs who have told me that children have come to chiefs and said, my father has applied for a concealed weapon permit. Please don't issue it. He's starting to suffer from dementia. Same thing with someone who may have a problem with alcohol. If they're carrying openly, people know it. If they're carrying a concealed weapon, that changes the whole scenario. And there's still that element of surprise. And and there's a genuine concern within the law enforcement community.
Representative Hull, what do you think? And then, Adam, I have another question for you. Go ahead.
So carrying openly, yes, it allows the other people around to see that the person has a firearm. But if the person is going to use it or misuse it, I don't think the license or the availability of a license in that procedure is going to stop them. And that's the whole thing right now. All this licensing system does is affect those who are law-abiding anyway. It doesn't actually prevent any crimes. It takes law enforcement officers away from actually doing the job of law enforcement officers and puts them behind desks doing paperwork. So as Representative Shurtleff just said, the chief in Manchester spent time issuing 1,000 licenses. He could have been out in the street doing other work at that time.
Well, again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, we're talking about a new bill addressing how Granite Staters might be allowed to carry a concealed weapon, tapping into this long conversation around the country about concealed versus open carry. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. So, Adam Winkler, typically, what are some of the objections to making it easier for somebody to carry in a concealed way? You've heard the arguments here in New Hampshire.
Well, one of the big arguments about concealed carry is whether allowing people to carry guns easily in public in a discreet or hidden way leads to increases in crime, violent crime like aggravated assaults, murders, rapes, etc. The data is actually pretty confusing out there. There's studies that show some of the original studies, the famous John Lott, More Guns, Less Crime studies, suggested that states that made it easier for people to carry guns concealed in public saw decreases in violent crime. The logic there being that criminals were afraid to attack people because they didn't know who was carrying a gun or who wasn't. So it had a deterrent effect. There have been subsequent studies. That Lott study has been subject to a lot of counter studies, if you will, and more recent research has suggested that actually it does lead that making it easier for people to carry guns in public concealed has led to some increases in certain kinds of violent crime, such as aggravated assault. I think one thing we do know is this, is that over the last 30 years, we've seen more and more states make it easier to carry guns in public. At the same time, we've seen really significant decreases in crime rates. I don't think there is necessarily a connection between the two things, but I think it does suggest that allowing people to carry guns in public concealed does not lead to huge increases in crime. I think there are concerns with proposals for constitutional carry because it takes the government out of any kind of oversight over who's going to carry a gun concealed. You know, there's a natural limit in how many people are going to really carry guns openly, because people are afraid of being excluded from stores or restaurants or having confrontations with people who are upset with you carrying a gun in public. So a lot more people will carry guns concealed than they will openly.
Okay. And Adam Winkler will follow up on that safety argument after a short break. This is The Exchange. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a look at the pros and cons of concealed weapons. We're looking at a bill that would change the permitting around concealed weapons, making it easier to carry concealed here in the Granite State, joining four other states that do so. Again, the number here in The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Adam Winkler joins us from Los Angeles, professor of constitutional law at UCLA, author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. He's a leading national researcher on guns. Also with us, Steve Shurtleff, Democratic House Minority Leader from Penacook and a former U.S. Marshal, and J.R. Hull, Republican State Representative from Dunbarton, board member of the New Hampshire Firearms Coalition. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And, gentlemen, I do want to get to this issue of whether easier permitting for concealed weapons makes society safer. That's certainly an argument that this bill's supporters have been making. But let's go to our listeners. We have a lot of people who want to jump in on our conversation. And Ken's in Antrim. Hi, Ken. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, I'm a gun owner, and the reason I applied for a carry concealed permit was when I go to the range, I didn't want to carry it visible, like in a holster, you know, like Old West type of thing. And it just makes people really uneasy, and it increases my risk, and I think as well, it promotes, increases the tension in the room or the store, And I don't want to do that. That's not my intention. My intention is to go to the range and fire my gun and to go home and put it away. And also the idea of, you know, if you ever need a, you know, feel the need to carry concealed, you still have to get a permit. And, you know, if you have some weird, you know, thing happening in your life, it's not going to be in time. You're going to have to carry it illegally if you feel the need. So, I mean, I just don't see the point in not having it just go strictly to carry concealed.
So can you, if you were going to go to the shooting range and you wanted to stop at the grocery store on the way there or on the way home, you know, you want to be able to just carry your gun concealed and do so legally?
Yes, and also, I mean, I don't see any bad guys, you know, wearing holsters with the guns visible. So I just no, it's silly for me to have to do that.
They're concealing already. What do you think, Representative Shurtleff?
Well, you know, I own guns. I've been a licensed hunter in New Hampshire for over 50 years. I went through the NRA Hunter Safety Course. And I think a lot of times when we talk about gun issues, we think it's pro-gun against anti-gun. It's those that are opposed to the Second Amendment, those that want to control firearms. And nothing could be further from the truth. As Justice Holmes said, you have the right to free speech, but you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. To do that in New Hampshire, you'd be charged with disorderly conduct, and nobody says you're anti-First Amendment. Conversely, because you want a rational possession of firearms and use of firearms and where they should and shouldn't be, doesn't mean you're opposed to the Second Amendment. So I think maintaining the status quo is fine. And there's one other aspect of this bill we haven't talked about, and that is the allowing of a fully loaded weapon in a vehicle, especially a long gun. We had a similar bill several years ago in the House before criminal justice. According to Fish and Game officer who testified, he saw four people who wounded themselves because he had a loaded weapon. And that's a part of the bill that concerns me as well.
Okay. There's definitely some lot of laws around the country that deal with guns in cars.
Correct.
For example.
So SB 116, just to explain what it does and does not do, does not alleviate the current statute under RSA 207, which is the prohibition of keeping a long gun loaded in a car. So that statute's still there. This bill will not, in fact, undo that. So I just to make sure that people aren't confused, this bill is about allowing someone to do concealed what they can currently do openly, and that would include carrying a pistol or revolver in a car.
Well, and here's some commentary on our Facebook page. And thanks to everybody who jumped in, by the way, on Facebook. Some good comments here. Anthony says, if you don't need a permit to carry openly, you shouldn't need one to carry concealed. The permit is nothing but a tax. It provides no extra safety. Chris agrees. He says, when you purchase a handgun legally, all your info and background gets checked by the federal government before you leave the gun shop. So the permitting process is redundant. He says, I personally don't think a known felon is going to go to the police to get a permit. He is going to have a weapon obtained illegally. Can you jump in on this, Adam Winkler, especially Chris's point? You know, you do go through a process before you get that gun license.
Well, not everyone does. You know, there's no basic licensing in the United States for people to get a gun. You have to go through a background check if you buy a gun from a federally licensed gun dealer. However, guns can be sold by people who are not federally licensed gun dealers. This is the discussion that we've had over the last couple of years about buying guns at gun shows, for instance. And it's not that you can buy a gun at a gun show without doing a background check. It's that if you buy a gun from anyone, anywhere, that is not a federally licensed dealer, they don't have to do a background check. So it's estimated that somewhere between 30% and 40% of gun sales occur without any background check whatsoever. I don't know if there's solid information behind that 30% to 40% figure, but we certainly know that there are plenty of people and plenty of avenues for buying a gun without doing a background check. So just because someone can get their hands on a gun does not mean that they've been vetted or verified to be someone who's law-abiding and safe with a firearm.
So is that an argument, Representative Hull, for some form of vetting and verifying, as Adam puts it, by local police departments?
As Professor Winkler just said, there is no current licensing system or registration. It's one thing that the gun owners feel very strongly about, that the moment we create a national database of gun owners, the moment they start collecting them. So that's been an historic fear and has been shown in other countries where they do, in fact, go create that database and then start collecting them. And even in New York City, 30, 40 years ago, they started to say, oh, we just want to know where these firearms are. And nowadays there's a very strong prohibition and most of them have been removed. So the concern there is we don't want to create that national database. Professor Winkler is correct in that if you go to a licensed dealer, and those are the type of people who actually have tables and booths at the gun shows, you are required to do a background check. So
in terms of getting that concealed versus open carry permit, if you get rid of the permitting process, is there any sort of check there for the public to make sure that someone isn't going to snap and do something terrible?
That's just it. Vermont, and I'm going to use Vermont as an example because they're an adjacent state.
Comes up a lot, yeah.
Right? But Maine as well. If you look at New England and you look at the violent crime data, and this goes back for over the last 10 years, the states with the least restrictive firearms laws, and that would be Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire, are far safer than Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Connecticut, and in most cases by a factor of 2 to 1. Vermont has not had this issue. If there was an issue that carrying concealed and or carrying openly was going to be a problem, the data would be out there to show that it's been a problem in Vermont. It's not. And this is a way New Hampshire can be safer because we're not going to create that emotional reaction that we talked about earlier.
The emotional reaction people have when they go into Starbucks and see somebody with a gun on their hip.
I would argue discreet carrier is far safer, both for the person carrying as well as for everybody around.
I want to ask you, I can see you want to jump in, Representative Shurtleff. I have a question for Adam. Lots of great comments too, but maybe Adam, to you first, does the research show that more open carry, more concealed carry, one or the other is quote unquote safer?
No, we haven't really seen any studies that are that have been replicated and subject to peer review on the difference between open carry and concealed carry in safe areas and what their impact is on safety. A lot of law enforcement officers don't like open carry because they feel that when they see someone carrying a gun openly, they now have to be worried about whether that person's going to use that gun properly or not. It often causes a ruckus in certain areas. But I think these things are very geographically distinct. There's a big difference between carrying a gun openly in the city that I live in, Los Angeles, than perhaps there is in your state, where it's more rural, the cities are much smaller, and you don't have the kind of gang violence and gang crime that we have here. And so I think that what the answers for New Hampshire may be unique to New Hampshire and not necessarily answers for gun policy across the country.
So can you really, Adam, do these state-by-state comparisons? Because we do hear these a lot.
It's extremely difficult. So, for instance, in comparing New Hampshire to Massachusetts, my understanding is that there's significant illegal crime activity that happens in Massachusetts that you don't get in New Hampshire, gang-related and otherwise. So that's going to have a big impact on crime rates and on the use of guns in violent crime. So I do think we need to think about these questions really in geographically targeted way, that there's a big difference between a state like New Hampshire, which is mostly rural and the cities are kind of small, than a place like, for instance, Los Angeles or New York or Boston, really large cities that have unique problems that might warrant more restrictive gun control laws.
A couple more comments from Facebook. Eileen says there is no evidence, none, that guns make us more safe. Nell says we aren't opposed to gun ownership. We are for reasonable controls, and allowing people to walk around places where people congregate isn't reasonable. But Representative Shurtleff, here's the Vermont argument again from Dan, who says anyone who's against concealed carry should consider our neighbor to the west. Vermont has essentially no gun laws. Anyone can carry anything, any way, anytime, anywhere in Vermont. Dan says, now, when you think of Vermont, do you think of a bunch of deranged gun-toting killers? No. You think of laid-back liberal hippies. Dan, thanks for the comment. So Adam Winkler's right. Obviously, there's a big difference between New Hampshire and Los Angeles, or New Hampshire and even Massachusetts. But New Hampshire and Vermont aren't really that different.
No, I think Senator Bradley has mentioned how safe Vermont is as far as their crime statistics. But I know for 3 years in a row, New Hampshire was ranked the safest state in the nation, according to the FBI. Another concern I have, I belong to the Legion Post in Penacook. And on the front door of that post is a sign that says no firearms permitted in this post. Not because the Legion is anti-gun, but they realize that people should not be carrying a gun where alcohol is served. With this restriction, people could very easily walk in with a concealed weapon and have an incident happen. As a member of the House, I've seen people carry concealed weapons and drop them. And I know personally how that can be distressful to a lot of people to see a gun bouncing along a floor. So, I think what we have now is good. I'm not quite sure why Senator Bradley brought this. I know, as I said, it's NRA model legislation. But we found in New Hampshire with a lot of bills that one size does not fit all.
Let's go back to our callers, gentlemen. Jason's in Concord. Hi, Jason. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
I had two questions, a practical question, but a broader question is that I think, does Representative Hull think that if places like Rhode Island and Massachusetts had no gun laws and everyone had guns, they would be safer? You can answer that after. But my practical question is about stand your ground laws, which New Hampshire has, and about the recent law enforcement shootings that we've seen. And a bill like this makes it so that law enforcement has to assume that every person they encounter has a concealed weapon, whereas now they are aware of the people who have concealed weapon permits. So they have to go into a situation assuming someone has a concealed weapon, which seems to be a dangerous situation. Similarly with stand your ground, people have to assume that other people have concealed weapons much more readily than they do today. And that seems to be an inherent dangerous situation. So, I'd like you to comment on those two things.
So just kind of heightens the tension all around, Jason? Puts everybody in yellow alert? Is that what you're saying?
Well, standard ground law says that you can preemptively defend yourself if you feel your life is threatened. So if you feel that people around you have concealed weapons, I feel that it's reasonable to assume people are going to feel more threatened.
Okay, 2 points there. And maybe you first, Chair Hull, but I definitely want to hear from you too, Adam Winkler. What about the law enforcement point? You know, there has been a lot of coverage, obviously, on police officers shooting suspects, and then it turns out the person wasn't armed. What about his point that if more people are carrying concealed, police will just assume everyone's carrying and be more likely to shoot?
So I would go back to police standards and training. They're already taught to think about this. When they approach a person, they don't know who's in the car. They see the license plate. They may or may not be the driver who's the owner of the car. So they're not going to know whether the person sitting in that driver's seat, okay, is in fact someone. If it's owned by John Doe, whether that's John Doe sitting in the car. So they're not going to know whether the person has a firearm or does not. There's no way to know that. The current system in place is supposed to keep that information with the local chief. So at the end of the day, police are already taught to be wary of
– assume that.
Make the assumption that the person may be armed. And that's why they have flashlights and cameras and all sorts of things to watch what's going on. So, I mean, there was a recent cartoon that I saw in a state legislature magazine where the officer is getting out of the car and there's this series of dots. I wonder if the guy has a firearm, and the person he's pulled over, I wonder if he has a body camera. The other growing issue that's showing up. So,
yeah, we're going to do a show on that, actually, the body camera issue. Go ahead.
At the end of the day, I don't know that that piece of paper creates a safer institution for anybody. And this goes to Jason's question about Massachusetts. Would Massachusetts be safer if there was more relaxed firearms laws? I think it would. It may not be true in Center City Boston, but in some of the suburbs, I believe it would be, because there would be less home invasions and other things that are going on. The current restrictions in Massachusetts makes it very hard, in fact, to get a license to carry concealed.
What about the other stand your ground point that he makes, Adam Winkler? I'm sure you're familiar as a researcher with the stand your ground laws around the country. New Hampshire has one. How does the issue of easier concealed weapons access, if I could put it that way, fold into the stand your ground issue?
Well, it folds into it in the sense that if it's harder for people to carry guns, when they do try to stand their ground, they're less likely to do violence to someone. So in Los Angeles, where I live, California has had stand your ground laws as a matter of judge-made law for over 100 years, but there's very, very few violent incidents that happen, because if someone, if you feel someone's threatening you or your property out on the street, you know, you're not allowed to have a gun. So you're going to hit them with your briefcase or your purse perhaps, but you're not going to take your gun and use it. There are some concerns that in stand your ground states, people are going to be more eager to use their gun to defend someone. It does seem that, for instance, all the controversy around George Zimmerman, some people suggested at the time that his easy access to gun made him more aggressive in that situation, made him go search out and go try to find and stop the person who was in the community who was threatening, who he thought to be a threat. But it's interesting, you know, one of the traditional arguments for people being able to carry a gun concealed is that they want to protect themselves and the public against crime. A state like New Hampshire has incredibly low crime rates. Does seem to me that makes it a little, it sort of takes at least some of the argument away from easy concealed carry in New Hampshire if you don't have that much crime to fight against. But that said, if you're the victim of someone's attack, having that gun present is going to be something that you're going to probably want for self-defense.
Again, our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Here's Jesse in Auburn. Hi, Jesse. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for letting me on.
Sure.
I had about 4 points. I think one of them's been made a bit already by JR, and that is that the term allow is being used as though issuing a license allows someone to carry concealed. And we know that criminals don't care. The mother may I approach to having the state say who is allowed to carry a gun is really just a huge myth perpetrated because criminals don't care. And it's the criminals that we need to worry about. What are we going to do about them and the danger that they impose upon society as opposed to folks who care about the law? Somebody who cares whether or not they've gotten a permission slip from the state isn't the real threat here, and pretending that they are is I think, a total distraction from what we need to do to use common sense in our policy.
So the law-abiding people, that's not really the issue anyway.
Exactly. And what this bill does is it simply says if you are legally entitled to own and possess a gun, if you're legally allowed to do that, then you are legally allowed to carry it concealed. And this makes a great deal of sense because the current law says it suggests to you that when you're in your car, you should not have your weapon or your handgun loaded. So the scenario gets to be you pull in front of a mall, you get out of your car, you grab your handgun and you load it, put it on your hip, and then you walk into the mall.
And Jesse, we'll follow up after a short break. Thank you for calling. The exchange number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the revival of the debate over commuter rail in New Hampshire. Send us an email before the show at exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Twitter or Facebook. Phone number for you to join us this hour as we talk about the pros and cons of New Hampshire's concealed weapons laws is 1-800-892-6477. Email, again, exchange@nhpr.org. Adam Winkler joins us from Los Angeles, professor of constitutional law at UCLA. Steve Shurtleff and J.R. Hull are in studio. J.R. Hull is a Republican state representative from Dumbarton, and Steve Shurtleff, Democratic House Minority Leader from Penacook. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Gentlemen, just before the break, we had a caller who said, look, make this change, allow people to have to carry concealed if they are legally allowed to own a gun. He said criminals don't care. What do you think about that, Steve Shurtleff? I'm sure you've heard that argument a lot.
Yeah, well, I think...
Why pick on the good guys when it's the bad guys who aren't going
to
follow the rules
to get
anyway?
Back to Jesse's question, the question isn't the local police department allowing you to carry a concealed weapon. Their only purpose is to check you for your suitability. So if you've got someone who's battling an addiction to alcohol or drugs, they would not be a suitable person. A person suffering from dementia would not be a suitable person to carry a firearm concealed. And as I pointed out earlier, the bill does say firearms can be loaded in a vehicle. And I have no problem if a person has a concealed weapon permit to carry a loaded handgun. I'm concerned about the person that's carrying a loaded rifle or shotgun, especially during hunting season, and there's a chance of an accident happening.
Do you want to jump in on that?
Sure. And we briefly talked about this before. There's a current prohibition on long guns, which would be rifles and shotguns, being loaded in cars. And although I would argue that there's reasons to repeal that on a separate reason, and I'm sure Representative Shurtleff and I disagree on that particular item, this bill would not change that as drafted currently.
Getting to Jesse's point, I want to throw this to you too, Adam Winkler. So he said, look, criminals don't care about the licensing requirements, the permitting and so forth. I did want to ask you, Adam Winkler, about this image of a good guy going to stop a bad guy. So the good guy's got his legal gun and so forth. But we've seen situations that aren't so black and white, Adam Winkler, that seemingly good guys suddenly snap, or they have an addiction that nobody knows about it, nobody expected it, they didn't have a criminal record. And then something terrible happens. So I'd love your thoughts on that idea that, you know, give permits to people who seem fine, but then often after these incidents, people say, oh, he seemed fine.
Well, that's right. I mean, one of the very difficult things here in regulating is that there are so many guns out there, and Americans have really enjoyed the right to bear arms for several centuries now. And as a result, we have a lot of guns out there. There's about 320 million guns in America, one per person approximately. And as a result, whatever kind of law we adopt makes it difficult to capture, for instance, all the criminals. The criminals don't obey many gun laws, and so it's very easy for them to get their hands on guns. And if someone who is originally entitled to have a gun, then suffers some kind of setback. The permitting process at least provides police with an opportunity to go back and take that permit away if they have that information. But we also shouldn't be too optimistic about that happening all that often. It's probably not going to happen very often where someone who has a concealed carry permit has that permit taken away from them because of some disability, because the police just generally won't know about it. One of the issues here with regards to crime is that many police officers don't like the idea of giving people the right to carry a gun concealed without any permit whatsoever, because when they stop someone and they found that person carrying a gun and they don't have a permit on them, that's generally a signal that the person is one of those criminals who doesn't obey the law, and that they can use that as a basis for investigation or arrest. If you allow people to carry guns concealed all the time with no permit, then the fact that you've stopped someone and you find them with a gun and don't have a permit doesn't provide any information for police officers about whether this person's likely to be a criminal.
Let's take another call. This is Andy in Tuftonboro. Hi, Andy. Go ahead.
Hi. I know they're talking about these other states, Alaska, Wyoming, and Arizona. Each one of those states have much stricter requirements on what you can to get a permit. You have to be 21. You also have to be subject to being able to possess a firearm under federal and state law. This particular bill just talks about New Hampshire law, which is a big difference. I know many people spoke about, well, federal law at the hearing, but this bill specifically just says you can't be prohibited under New Hampshire law without adding the federal requirements. Each one of those states have the federal requirements. Each one of those states require that you complete a handgun competency course.
So the states that we're comparing ourselves to, you're saying, Andy, it's not exactly accurate because those states do follow federal law more closely? Is that what you're saying?
They also include prohibitions under federal law under their state law. So
I see.
Because what happens is with a state law, with federal law, a state officer cannot necessarily enforce that. So they're going to apply to the state, they're going to apply to the local police chief, and they may be prohibited because they've got a misdemeanor domestic violence, which is a federal prohibition. New Hampshire does not include that under our prohibitions.
Well, I definitely want to ask Representative Hull about that. But, Andy, you said you testified at the hearing. Are you one of the police chiefs who testified?
I am the police chief who testified.
So as a police chief, what are you more comfortable with, open carry or concealed carry?
I think, speaking for myself, there are concerns with, I guess I would not be totally opposed to something that exactly mirrors Wyoming or exactly mirrors Alaska, because in order to carry in Wyoming, even concealed, you still have to meet those requirements. So in Wyoming, for example, you can't carry concealed unless you've had that training, unless you've submitted to a criminal, you know, unless you meet those requirements. I shouldn't say the criminal background, because why would you do on somebody that doesn't have an application? But you have to be a resident of Wyoming. Somebody from Vermont could not go and get a permit in Wyoming because there's no permitting there for non-residents there. So those states have, you know, you can carry without, but you still have to, especially Wyoming, you have to meet that requirement.
Okay. Well, let me ask Representative Hull about that. Very interesting point by Andy that those other states we're comparing ourselves to work more with federal law.
So this goes to whether we as a state can just outright trump federal law. And you'll see this being raised as an issue on a separate bill that I have in regarding enforcement of federal laws. Currently, right, our police officers can in fact enforce federal law. Okay, they may have to actually bring in a federal officer from another who has jurisdiction, but they can arrest somebody who's breaking a federal law. We don't have every law in New Hampshire on the books that is also in the federal statutes, so I don't know that that creates any dilemmas there, in the sense that if you're prohibited by federal law from owning, you're not going to be allowed to own New Hampshire.
So it is kind of the same thing you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you want to jump in? Oh, go ahead, Representative Hull, finish, and then Steve Shurtleff. Go ahead.
So the statute, the change to the statute says chiefs would be issuing licenses to those who applied, provided they're not prohibited under New Hampshire law. But if they're prohibited under owning federal law, they're prohibited anyway as a person.
It's my understanding under current New Hampshire law, a minor can carry a concealed weapon temporarily with parental permission. But under this law, a minor can carry a concealed weapon because there is no minimum age requirement. And that's a tremendous concern to me.
Is there an age requirement?
So there are federal age requirements. So you may not sell a pistol or revolver to anyone under the age of 21. The only way they can receive one is through their parents. They have to have on their person a written note from their parents to be allowed to carry it. So there's a difference. And it's 18, I believe, for long guns. And those federal statutes would still hold true here.
So teenagers can carry guns if they have permission from their parents?
Correct.
But if now, I know some teenagers, they could probably fake the note. But
well, and there's still other prohibitions in place. That's just regarding, right, if you are to have one on your person, you would need a note from mom.
Here's an email that just came in from Alan, who says, good to hear from you, by the way, Andy in Tufton Borough. Alan says, I would just like it to be known that as a law enforcement officer of 15 years, most of which has been in the North Country, it is my experience that not the majority of officers have concerns. We all get lumped together based on the statements of a few police chiefs around the country, mostly from bigger cities, as being concerned. Alan says, the vast majority of officers I speak with and work with have no issue with people carrying firearms. All law enforcement officers should assume every person they come in contact with is armed at all times and take the appropriate precautions. That's a point you made earlier, Representative Hull. What do you think, Adam Winkler? Alan's probably right. Law enforcement probably has different feelings on this depending on their own views and also where they live.
That's right. There's often a divide between police chiefs and on-the-beat police officers. In fact, over the last 20 years, we've seen one of the big developments in the gun debate is that police chiefs have become strong supporters of gun control laws. Now, traditionally, police officers are trained to use their guns by NRA-certified instructors. The NRA is sort of like the place you go to learn how to fire a weapon safely and with the proper training. So there's traditionally been a close relationship between law enforcement and organizations like the NRA, but that's really suffered a big divide in recent years. And the commentator is absolutely right that not only is there a difference between police chiefs and on-the-beat police officers in many places, but there's also a difference between police chiefs in big cities. They have different problems than police chiefs in places that don't have the same kind of violent crime, gang-related activity with guns. So those things do really affect our assessment of whether a gun control law is something that's appropriate for a particular community. As we said earlier, we should have geographical distinctions and recognize that government definitely has different interests in a very tightly inhabited, urban, densely populated area than it does in a relatively rural place where there aren't the same kind of criminal activities going on.
Let's take one more call. This is Penny in Concord. Hi, Penny. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. I'm just really concerned about a couple of the arguments. One of the arguments is that words mean things, and these are licenses in New Hampshire. They're not permits like they are in other states, but they keep saying, you know, these people might become mentally ill, these people might do this bad thing, and they might do that bad thing. Nobody can predict the future. You might drive drunk in your car tomorrow, so we should take your driver's license away. You know, you just don't know. And so to say that, you know, we're worried that these people are going to do this or do that just doesn't hold water with a constitutional right. And the other thing is they talk about the training and the age limit. New Hampshire hasn't had an age limit for decades. We haven't had a problem. We haven't had a training requirement for decades. We haven't had a problem. And so all of these things are what we call red herring. They have absolutely nothing to do with whether or not we should take away people's rights, because that's basically what we're happening.
Penny, can I ask you a quick question? Thank you for calling in. And I hear you. You know, nobody can predict what someone's going to do. If a person indicates that he or she might be struggling with drug abuse, alcohol addiction, violence in the home, should local police be able to say, you know, Penny, I don't think this is a good time for you to have a permit or a license?
I don't think they should, without due process, because here's what's going to happen, okay? I might say, in joking, I'm going to punch you in the nose, right? We're having an argument. You do that again, I'm going to punch you in the nose. Does that mean I'm becoming violent and that I'm not stable and you're going to take my license to carry away? At what point do we talk about that? We have procedures in New Hampshire for involuntarily admitting someone to psychiatric facilities. And if so, they are per se prohibited from possessing firearms. So whether or not you have a license becomes a moot point because you can't lawfully have firearms.
Okay. Penny, thanks for calling in. Representative Shurtleff, what do you think?
Well, I think
you never know what someone's going to do. She's right. You know, I could drive my car
drunk,
I think, and
Penny's
I've never done that before.
Brought up a good point. The point being, currently if a license is issued to carry a concealed weapon, I could see a member of a family coming to a local police chief and say, I don't think Dad should carry that weapon concealed anymore, just as children often notify motor vehicle that Mom or Dad shouldn't be driving. People do that in New Hampshire because we do care about the safety of our loved ones and others. Before Professor Winkler mentioned about this breach between law enforcement and the NRA, I started in law enforcement in 1969, and there was a strong bond. But then I think it was in 1995, there was a bill that the NRA was pushing to sell commercially the Teflon bullet, whose only purpose was to pierce ballistic material, a police officer's vest. And that's when the first President Bush resigned his lifetime membership. And I think we saw the NRA go far to the right at that time. And I know a lot of local law enforcement people became very disappointed in the views of the NRA.
If this bill passes and becomes law, Representative Shurtleff, would local police have less ability to do what you have talked about a couple times? You know, I'm worried about Daddy has dementia. I'm worried about my son. He's been drinking. Please take his gun permit away.
Exactly.
Because, please do not give him a permission to carry
concealed. Because this bill would say that anybody who can have a gun can carry it concealed. And we know there are certain circumstances I've outlined that there are circumstances we don't want to see that. And the other thing is the number of questions that we've had this morning about this bill, the interpretation, it is so cloudy. It's difficult for a law enforcement officer to have to make a judgment when we sitting here seem to have concerns and questions.
Go ahead, Representative Hull, and then I have another question for you, Adam Winkler. Yeah.
So as a society, we don't tend to take away rights of individuals until they've done something. They've through some action, have offended somebody, violated somebody, whatever. And it's at that point through a due process that we actually take away their rights. And those rights could be freedom to move about society because they're now in a prison. They could be loss of driving privileges. They could, right? A DUI is, right? They've been driving irresponsibly. They've been driving under intoxicated. And now they have forfeited their right to drive a car for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, years, whatever the current statutes are and whatever the judge rules down. So as a society, we have chosen not to take away rights of individuals until they have committed some act, which is an act of forfeiture, right?
So innocent until proven
guilty.
How do you feel when you hear Representative Shurtleff talk about the calls that he's gotten from people? You know, again, my son's been drinking. Dad has dementia. I'm worried about my sister's mental illness. I don't want him, her to have a gun.
So the same question.
So I haven't done anything yet, but there's deep concern.
And even now, you'll see that every once in a while there's a bill put in regarding taking cars away, right, or taking a driver's license away. And sometimes the best way to deal with this is within the family to say, you know, I understand that your mom's now 95 years old and doesn't have the dexterity to drive well, but maybe it's time for you to have that conversation with her as your son.
All right, gentlemen, we've run out of time. I think we'll be talking about this again as the legislative session continues. Adam Winkler, thank you for joining us. Getting up early there out in California.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Adam Winkler, professor of constitutional law at the University of California, Los Angeles, author of the book Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Steve Shurtleff, thank you for coming in.
Appreciate My pleasure.
It. Steve Shurtleff, Democratic House Minority Leader from Penacook and a former U.S. Marshal. J.R. Hole, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
J.R. Hole, Republican State Representative from Dunbarton, board member of the New Hampshire Firearms Coalition. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Faith Meixel and Jason Moon. Our intern is Joanna Albertson-Grove. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoi.